individual speakers and callers and do not necessarily represent the views of KFAR Radio or any of our respective employees, affiliates, or sponsors of this program.
Welcome to Shooter's Corner, your program for conversation on guns, shooting, and your Second Amendment rights. Brought to you by Price RV, Auto Trim Design, by Rogers Auto Repair, and by Frontier Outfitters. Now, your host, Chuck Indereeden.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. As you can tell, I'm not Chuck. Good morning, everyone. It's currently 53 degrees here in Fairbanks, Alaska. Slightly cloudy, just a little bit trickling in, but like yesterday where there was no clouds, and then 4 p.m. rolled around and it started to rain. So we'll see how the day goes on. I am Matt, and joined with me today is Colonel Montana Kid Hammer. How you doing today?
I'm doing well, Matt. Thank you for having me today.
That is great to hear, and I'm glad to have you on today. All right, so let's get the show started with a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Freedom is not a bargaining chip. It is not a line item on a tax ledger, and it is certainly not a favor that politicians get to hand out when the timing suits them. Gun owners must take note. We must not allow this betrayal to go without consequence. All right, so before we get into the main topics of today's show, just got some friendly little reminders for you guys. Alaska Outdoor Membership Program will be May 21st from 5:30 to 7 p.m. at the TVSA Range, 1230 TVSA Way, Fairbanks. Speaking of TVSA, we've got their memberships, starting with their annuals being priced at $125. The annual family is $250. That includes your spouse and children under 18. Their lifetime membership is $1,250, and their annual junior is $35. Under 18, they must be accompanied by an adult or a part of a approved program. Public shooting hours at the TVSA range are every Thursday from 6 to 8 p.m. Cost is $5 for members and $20 for non-members. It's a great range and good people under new management. Last but not least, C4 Training Group is hosting the Active Self-Defense Protection Skills Summit in Fairbanks, Alaska on June 20th and June 21st. This exclusive immersive training event is designed to sharpen your defensive skills using ASP's evidence-based techniques. Experience two transformative days of professional instruction tailored for real-world self-defense scenarios. The instructors will be Neil Widener, and Chris Bean. Go to our website course calendar to get the link or to sign up, or go directly to the activeselfprotection.com/shop to sign up. And I know I've said this last week and the week before, and Chuck and I have said it 1,000 times, but again, it is very worthwhile training. If you're thinking of upping your game, I would definitely recommend taking the class. And if you think you have peaked and you're kind of at a plateau where you can't get any better, well, you're wrong. You can always get better. You can always improve. And going to the ASP Skill Summit is definitely something that'll help you improve overall as a shooter and as a human being.
Oh. That's good. That's a good way to improve.
Yeah. You got to always train. I think people forget about that, you know, and it's not just training, you know, the dry fire techniques that we talk about and doing all the fun stuff you can do at home or at the range with your buddies trying to improve. But, you know, going and actually going to classes, taking in what they're saying, you know, not showing up with a bad mindset, so showing up with a I'm willing to learn mindset.
Absolutely.
And then trying it out. And, you know, that's every training across the country is going to be different. There's a lot of cookie cutter stuff, but you can learn something different from everyone. You can pull from someone's anything from their teaching techniques to maybe they're shooting a different way that you feel like is bettering yourself rather than something else, you know, whatever. If you're going to these classes, take in everything that you can. If you show up with a, well, I'm here to take the class, but I already know everything, maybe I'll teach the class, then, you know, you're going to have a bad time. You're not going to have fun. And even if you go to a class and you, for, you know, somehow you're the best shooter on the planet, you know everything, you still get to meet good people. You get to network. You get to meet awesome instructors. You get to do a lot of fun stuff. So to take full advantage of any training opportunity you can get, because at the end of the day, you can only get better.
If you're the best shooter in the room, you're in the wrong room.
Absolutely. Yeah. You're in a very bad room. You need to get out.
We just, last weekend, we had another one of our SASC training courses. And I forget how much I enjoy teaching it.
Yeah.
It never gets old. You know, many of my students are the same students, and yet we seem to find new material that we've discovered along the way that is good for everyone.
Yeah.
So, yes, you can never train enough if you're in the proper mindset.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, even taking the same course twice doesn't hurt. You don't have to take it back to back. You can take it a year, or, I mean, a few months to a year apart. But I mean, we've had it with the ACHP. People will come back and this is my third or fourth time taking it in 20 years and I forgot about this, or, oh, this thing changed, you know? So
yes,
taking it once doesn't make you a subject matter expert in that field. It's the constant studying and progression that you need to do in order to be well educated that'll help you in the long run.
As we train is how we fight.
Yep, yeah. Absolutely. So if you want to go ahead and introduce yourself, I know you're a very popular and reoccurring guest, but maybe there's a first-time listener. So if you want to go ahead and give us your introduction.
Well, I'm Colonel Montana Kid Hammer. I've lived in the community going on 33 years. The United States Air Force had brought me to this community, and it's just one of those things that circumstances, not good or bad, but circumstances left me here. There were three times I tried to move away, and an outside force said, no, we like you here. I was one of the founding members of the Golden Heart Shooter Society, which we are affiliated with SAS, the Single Action Shooting Society. And that club celebrates 30 years here in the community. And we're always looking for new shooters. Now, again, you don't have to own guns, you know, and know the Old West history. When we get done with you, or when you get done with us, you'll have that. But like I said, I was military before, civilian. You know, I managed to pick up three, you know, college degrees along the way, which I've learned. Actually, tomorrow I have a book signing at Barnes & Noble from noon to 4. One of those degrees was children's literature. You know, people will often say, you're always doing something, aren't you? And I said, well, shouldn't we?
Yeah.
So, and I love this community. I, you know, go outside from time to time, have a great time in San Antonio or in Billings, Montana, you know, wherever I go. But the strings tug me back home. And so here I am, and thank you for letting me share.
Oh, well, thank you for, you know, sharing with us what your passion is. And I had someone recently, I overheard someone say, you know, life is too short. And someone else said, life is the longest thing you'll ever do. Make the most out of it. And you only get one. And, you know, it really speaks to the volume of what you want to do. If you're, you know, you just go to work, you come home, watch a show, and then go to sleep, and you just rinse and repeat. You know, you're not making the best out of your life. You're not fulfilling it. You're not doing everything that you could be doing. You're not learning enough. You're not doing anything. And so, you know, the fact that you stay busy, that's awesome. A lot of people don't. A lot of people just kind of fall into old ways or very closed off ways. So it's good that you're getting out there. You're not only are you promoting yourself, but you're promoting good material, great reads, and for everyone to enjoy and share. So it's awesome.
Where I think a lot of people miss it in life, if it's, you know, go to work, you know, come home, eat, watch TV show, you know, go to sleep, you know, rinse and repeat, is we have a purpose in life, and that's what I've been pursuing. I was born to be a teacher. I did it for 10 years in the military of my 26 years in service. And people say, well, how come they didn't give you a medal or an award for this? I said, the classroom is the finest award that I can have. And I love it. And when your students come back, no matter whatever I've taught, and they come back and they say, you know, I appreciate that what you gave me, you know, and I've used it. That's the thing. Find your purpose, and life, long or short, will work out just fine.
Absolutely. And I think that's, you know, that's a great thing to touch on. You don't have to be awarded for doing something. You don't need a physical medal to state, you know, I did this. It's the memories that you created for yourself. And then, you know, whoever you've instructed or taught, they're going to have those memories too, positive,
absolutely,
sometimes negative. You know, maybe they didn't like what someone was teaching or whatever the case is, but you know, it's there and it's going to be a part of them, and they may talk about it. And then, you know, that memory continues and it lives on and it grows. And I think that's what's extremely special about being in an industry where we can teach, is even if you don't remember, you know, a person's name, the instructor's name, you don't remember exactly every detail of that class, but you took something away from it and you told someone else about it. Oh, I heard it from here. And this is, and you know, you reminisce, You're keeping that memory alive. You're keeping it going.
What I love is some students, I don't really like what the instructor said, but it works.
Yeah.
So that means the instructor works. So yes, it's important to realize that.
Yeah.
Because when we close off our minds from these things, our world does get smaller.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And you start to, it's just great. I know we're talking about teaching here on Shooter's Corner, but I mean, it is really funny how many times you'll get a student that is, I've never done it this way. I don't like doing it this way, or whatever the case is. And then you have them do it and they're like, oh, well, it's never worked for me like that before. This is the first time I've gotten it to work. And you're like, oh, it's cool. Or seeing someone, what I like especially is getting someone in who's maybe never fired a weapon before, or they've had very limited experiences with it, and teaching them, okay, here's how you're going to hold it. Here's even the basics of here's how you're loading your magazine. And then seeing them go from knowing, next to nothing in that certain skill set to they come out of it way sharper. They know a lot more. They're starting to become more comfortable with it. And just seeing that little glow in their eyes, they're like, wow, I actually did it. That's what's worth it.
What I picked up in my last class is that in class with our books, it's two-dimensional.
Yeah.
And what I like to try to do is create the three-dimensional look in their mind before they get to the range and go, oh my gosh, this doesn't look quite like, in class it was this. Now I'm out here and I'm lost, because, get that third dimension built in. Yep. So that when they arrive to the range to shoot or whatever, they do, it fits, it works. They make the translation from two-dimensional to three-dimensional.
Absolutely, and that's a good segue. We got to get into our first break here. But stay tuned after the break. We've got some stuff to talk about American history, and then some, I think, I'm not going to spoil it, but some fun stuff for the Hammer and I to discuss about modern firearms versus stuff of the West. So stay tuned here at Shooter's Corner at KFAR Radio.
Going camping is the simply satisfying, relaxing way to enjoy the Alaskan outdoors. Plan to get the most out of your experience with a visit to Frontier Outfitters. Check off your list of essentials, such as tents, sleeping bags, and cookware from your favorite brands, such as Mountain Hardware, Kelty, Slumberjack, Coleman, Jetboil, and more. Garmin GPS. Protect your eyes with sunglasses by Oakley, Maui Jim, and Costa. Your successful camping trip begins at Frontier Outfitters. Frontier Outfitters, for your Alaskan lifestyle.
It's that time of year again. The sun is out, roads are clear, and gravel is everywhere. At Auto Trim Design, we have you covered. With our self-healing paint protection film, keeping your paint looking showroom new and defending from rock chips and scratches, helping your car stay flawless for years. With our ceramic window tint, not only will it add a stylish look, it also provides protection from harmful UV rays, reduces glare, blocks heat, and increases privacy. From exterior protection to interior comfort, Auto Trim Design has you covered. Stop by or give us a call to get your vehicle ready for summer in Alaska.
KFAR weather.
Overcast overnight with a low of 44. Northeasterly winds around 5 miles per hour. Cloudy skies again Thursday, high of 60. Mainly cloudy skies Thursday night, lows dip down to about 42. Partly cloudy skies and dry Friday and Saturday, low 60s. Friday, upper 60s by Saturday. And that's your weather on KFAR 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Paul Trombley.
And now back to Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio.
Welcome back, listeners. I'm not Chuck. This is Matt here at Shooter's Corner. I am joined today with Colonel Hammer, and we just got done discussing our favorite parts of instructing and teaching and all the things that we've gotten from it. So now we're going to get into this week in firearms history. So I got a few things here. The first one, I didn't even know this was a thing. I don't think I maybe have seen iterations of it, but the Puckle gun patent was May 15th of 1718. British inventor, lawyer, and writer James Puckle patented the defense gun, spelled like D-E and then fence, not with an S, widely regarded as one of the earliest manually operated repeating firearms or proto machine guns. It featured a tripod-mounted flintlock with a revolving cylinder holding 9 to 11 shots, allowing a rate of fire of about 9 rounds per minute, far faster than contemporary single-shot muskets, which were typically around 3 rounds per minute. Notably, it was designed with two types of ammunition: round bullets for use against Christians and square ones meant to cause more horrific wounds against Muslim Turks, reflecting the era's religious and geopolitical tensions, intended primarily for shipboard defense against borders. It saw limited production and no major combat use, but represented a significant conceptual leap toward rapid-fire weapons. I imagine you know something about that. The Puckett gun or the Puckle gun?
Yeah. Puckle gun. I've heard of it, and you know, as you've summarized it there, you know, that's pretty much what I know and understand. Primarily the leap in technology, the possibility. Of course, we also know that leaps in technology, good or bad, oftentimes take forever to come into the mainstream arena.
And I think it's cool when you look at stuff like that, which is like, you never hear of something or you've seen something that's come out that's been based off of loosely something that happened hundreds of years ago. And you just think, wow, I would have never assumed that was a thing or even guessed it. But there was one I had never seen until recently. I was just going through some articles about pretty much essentially the same thing. And one of them was for the co-pilots in World War One on those little biplanes or their rear gunners. They would have a pistol. They'd have their Colt 1911. But I had never – there's no pictures of it, which is funny. There's a patent for it. Apparently a few were developed and sent out. But it was this cage that went around the 1911. And, you held it. It mounted on to the left side of your trigger guard. And it was just this rudimentary – chicken wire cage that went over your hand to catch the casings as you were shooting so they didn't fall onto you while you're flying and it burning you. But I can't find real pictures of it, just the prototype drawings and all the stuff around that, but no actual, real evidence that this existed other than word of mouth. But it's cool to see that someone did do this, someone liked it enough to where they mocked it up and did it, and they're still telling that story of how this little thing happened that may not be extremely significant, but certain things have been made based off of that little design.
I have a modern makeup of it. Of course, it's plastic, and it's which I like. I actually have them for my 27 Thompsons, so that one, I don't lose the brass, but also I don't make a mess.
Yeah.
Also, in those airplanes, you wanted to be careful to get small little objects that would wander around into possible paths of flight control cables and things. So, yes. It's a saver.
It's just really cool to see. But let's see. What do we got? Next up is the Battle of Newmarket, May 15th, 1864. Fought in Virginia's Shenandoah Valley during the American Civil War. Confederate forces under Major General John C. Breckinridge included about 247 Virginia Military Institute Academies cadets, some as young as 15 to 17, defeated a larger Union force commanded by Major General Franz Sigel. The battle highlighted the era's rifled muskets and artillery tactics. The young cadets' famous charge in driving rain became legendary in Southern memory, helping secure the valley temporarily and allowing reinforcements for Robert E. Lee's army. It underscored how Civil War firearms like the Springfield and Enfield rifle muskets dramatically increased lethality and range compared to earlier smoothbores. Now, the moment I mentioned this, you went, ah. So you want to talk about that a little bit?
Certainly. Franz Sigel is a German that comes in, to our army. And, I don't want to say that, he wasn't competent in this, that, in the other, but he wasn't competent enough with the American mindset. And why would he? He's a German.
Yeah.
And appointed and stuff. And young men, oh my gosh, did they have a fighting chance at all? Oh, no, not. They're just cadets. No. This is where when you underestimate your enemy, you pay dearly for it.
Yep.
But yes, the firearms that you've made mention do make a great difference from the smoothbore that, starts the war with even the Federals. And so, ambitious young men, the appropriate firearms, maybe a little bit of a, I'm not really an American, underestimating the enemy. And of course, the young men, they're not overestimating anything. They're giving the best they have.
Yeah.
And it creates this very interesting battle as such. And again, how you're led will also match how you fight along with your training. So, yes, there we have the Battle of Newmarket.
No, that's pretty good. I appreciate you expanding on that because I didn't know a lot about it. I feel like I know a good amount of history, and then when I'm writing these articles out for this week's in firearms, I'm like, wow, I know way less than I thought, which is good. I like to learn. But let's see. The next one we have is early machine gun development and the Gatling gun. Richard Jordan Gatling invented his crank-operated multi-barrel gun in 1861, patented in May of 1862, with first combat uses emerging in the later Civil War period. This fits well with all this mid-May innovations. The Gatling gun was capable of firing up to 200 rounds per minute. It was hand-cranked with gravity-fed ammunition, so if you're not understanding what that means, you look at any modern firearm and the magazine is usually at the bottom of the gun, pointed upwards. It's feeding with a spring. Gravity was essentially you had a chute or a tube that you were loading your projectiles and rounds into. And then as you were cranking this handle, you have your bore axis that's turning and it's grabbing around, and it gets to a certain point where it fires it off, and then it ejects the shell outwards. But it was ahead of its time because you look at what was going on around then. Not a lot of internally fed weapons were out and mass produced. And even with the exploration and the invention of, you know, a bolt action with an internal magazine, the Gatling gun was way ahead of its time. You have a large considered at the time, I mean, a large capacity magazine. I want to say it was 20 rounds, 15 rounds.
You had a stick magazine and you had a drum magazine.
Yeah.
And again, the how many were in the stick would vary the size of the stick.
Yeah.
And there were any number of them made. And yes, Richard J. Gatling really was interesting. He starts out in farm implements and cranking farm, you know, like seed planters and things.
Yeah.
And he begins to see that this turning action could be implemented into the firearm. And again, our ordnance department, among others, not too sure about it. Oh, they'll waste ammo. You know, all of these things, which once they went in the field and were implemented, you know, like our topic on the BAR. You want to know how good the BAR was? Ask our enemy.
Yeah.
Same way here with the Gatling guns. And even Custer had opportunities to take Gatling guns with him on his 76 expedition.
You know, it's. I think the crank technology is really cool. Thank God it didn't last, because I can't imagine what shoulder-fired rifles we'd have now if we just never progressed past that. I think accuracy by volume is the most you'd get trying to maneuver that thing around and trying to stay on target. You'd probably have a 20 MOA pattern at 50 meters. You're not getting a whole lot. But the last thing, I know we talk about John Moses Browning a lot here, but, you know, through his birth in 1855, and many patents fall around that same time, May is a really big month for John Browning, because a lot of his prolific career patents and designs, he for some reason did in May. I don't know, maybe it was a birthday inspiration to himself, or he knew his month was coming up, so he wanted to create something great. But he created and influenced icons like the Winchester lever action rifles, the Colt 1911, my favorite Browning automatic rifle, and various other machine guns, the M1917, the M1919. His work spanned the late 19th century to early 20th centuries, bridging black powder and smokeless eras with reliable semi-automatic and automatic mechanisms still in use today in the civilian and military world all across the globe. His designs have been effective at emphasizing practicality, durability, and innovation. And I think he's, I mean, if you had a Mount Rushmore of figures that, you know, have defined firearm use in that culture, I think John Browning is definitely one of the first heads on there.
Yeah, he'd probably be the first head on there. You know, and it's interesting, as you mentioned, you know, 1911, it's still, the military still will work with it. They'll upgrade it.
Yep.
But what, you know, most of us that understand slide action firearms is this, that every time one's invented, worked with, whatever, they go back to the 1911 to see if they can put in what was in that pistol.
Yeah, and it is funny that you say that, because you'll see it now more than ever. It's not as used as much as it was. But you'll still see people carrying it. It won't be, you know, the entire, at least in the U.S., it won't be an entire company or, you know, something like that. I know Recon Marines still carry them. Some members of ODAs, the Special Forces, some of them will carry it. There's famous pictures of, I forget what his name is, but the four-star general in charge of SOCOM years back. Everyone else is, you know, rocking Glock 19s, Glock 17s, M9s, and he's there with a, I mean, really well-used 1911 on his hip and a leather holster, and he's got a looks like a rawhide belt, and he's in multicam, and, you know, it just, it sticks out like a sore thumb, but in the best way possible, because you're looking at a mix of modern technology and innovation, and then a piece of history that still is extremely relevant in, you know, what's being used today.
The Texas Rangers have the option to order different firearms and carry them, and still many carry the
1911. Do they really?
Yes.
Huh. You know, I gotta say, as much as I wouldn't carry a 1911, just because I'm, you know, I firmly believe the 9mm does really well. The data, you know, supports it on all ends, as well as magazine capacity. I got to give the 1911 one thing. While it may be slightly heavier, it still is a slim pistol. And, you know, carrying that concealed is a lot easier to do. But that is bringing us into our mandatory mid-show break. So please stay with us here through the break at Shooter's Corner, and we will be right back after these announcements.
Broadcasting from the Satellite West studio, you're listening to KFAR 97.5 FM.
660. Fox News, I'm John Saucier. President Trump meeting with Chinese President Xi Jinping in Beijing today. The president called the relationship between the two countries one of the most consequential in history.
We had extremely positive and productive conversations and meetings today with the Chinese delegation earlier.
President Xi calling for the United States and China to become partners and not rivals. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer believes President Xi is out-negotiating President Trump and leaving the U.S. in a vulnerable position.
If Xi out-negotiates Trump, and if America emerges from these negotiations weaker than it was before, there'll be only one person to blame. Donald Trump.
President Trump says China has agreed not to send military gear to Iran, and they agree the Strait of Hormuz should be reopened. A ship anchored off the UAE was seized and taken towards Iran. America's listening to Fox News.
It's time for your Alaska News Minute.
KPOO reports Governor Mike Dunleavy issued a disaster declaration on May 11th for two interior Alaska communities after they were inundated by severe ice jam flooding. The declaration covers areas near Chalkitsik on the Black River and Hughes on the Koyukuk River, which were struck by rapidly rising water over the past week. Jeremy Zydek of the State Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Management said that almost a dozen homes flooded in Chalkitsik, but the situation is especially dire in Hughes, where high waters have made it difficult for the state to deliver emergency personnel and supplies. Zydek said ice and water on the runway meant fixed-wing aircraft could not land in Hughes. The water has gone down a little bit, but the runway is still not serviceable, he said. We're looking at an alternate runway that is nearby. With spring breakup still in full swing, Zydek said the danger hasn't passed in the interior, and more communities could be added to the disaster declaration if necessary.
Streaming live online at KFAR660.com.
What does it look like when your faithful friend in the driveway has an off day? Well, it looks like no fun, like bumming a ride to work, the store, rescheduling lunch with your yoga instructor, all because your four-wheeled pal is waiting for parts? We do our own routine maintenance, but our chariot depends on us to schedule that for them. Airboat and inboard service, too. Family-owned and operated. Keeping Fairbanks on the road since 1967. Rogers Auto Repair.
Hey Fairbanks, Bryant from Auto Trim Design. Now's the perfect time to get your work trucks set up right. From toppers, back racks, beacons, running board seat covers, floor liners, bed slides, ladder racks, and so much more. Auto Trim Design has everything you need to tackle any job. Our commercial toppers keep your equipment and tools secure and out of the elements. Need to keep your bed organized? Add a deck drawer system to easily access all your gear. Contact Auto Trim Design for your professional truck grade accessories today.
Customized by Auto Trim.
And now back to Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio.
Welcome back, listeners. I'm still not Chuck. All right, so.
Oh, darn it. I thought the break would do something.
Yeah, maybe he's here in spirit. So before we went on our break, we were talking about our week in firearms history and all of the cool stuff that's been invented and the things that we've discovered along the ways and certain ideas that have come to fruition based off of older models. But now we are going to get into my editorial. So today's topic is why Americans must remember our history, the peril of forgetting, and the Second Amendment. All right, bear with me here, ladies and gentlemen. In an age of rapid change, digital distraction, and call to remember our history is not nostalgia, it is survival. A people who forget where they came from will not know who they are or where they are going. The United States was founded on radical ideas. That rights came from God, not government. That legitimate authority flows from the consent of the governed that free citizens must possess the means to defend their liberty. Today, as debates rage over gun laws, we risk repeating the very mistakes our founders warned against by allowing strict restrictions that erode our core foundational principles. History is our collective memory. Without it, we become unmoored. George Santayana's warnings rings eternal. Those who cannot remember the past are condemned to repeat it. American history teaches the fragility of liberty. It shows how tyranny often begins not with tanks in the streets, but with gradual disarmament, centralized power, and the erosion of individual responsibility. Our revolution was fought by armed citizens who refused to submit to a distant government that sought to disarm them. The spark at Lexington and Concord in 1775 came when British forces marched to seize colonial arms and powder. An armed populace turned what could have been a simple policing action into opening shots of independence. Remembering this teaches humility and vigilance. It reminds us that governments, even those with good intentions, can and will overreach. The founders studied history, ancient Rome, England's glorious revolution, in their own colonial experience, and concluded that power corrupts. They designed a republic with separated powers, checks and balances, and a Bill of Rights precisely because they distrusted concentrated authority. Forgetting this invites the complacency that precedes loss of freedom. A people ignorant of their founding will trade liberty for security only to find they have neither. At the heart of our founding documents lies the principle of individual rights. The Declaration of Independence asserts that we are endowed by our Creator with unalienable rights, including life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Government exists to secure these, not grant them. The Second Amendment stands as a bulwark, a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. This was no afterthought. It reflected deep distrust of standing armies and faith in an armed citizenry. James Madison in Federalist Number 46 argued that Americans possessed the advantage of being armed, unlike Europeans, whose governments feared trusting the people with weapons. Samuel Adams declared the Constitution should never prevent peaceable citizens from keeping their own arms. Joseph Story, Supreme Court Justice, called the right to bear arms the palladium of liberties of a republic, a safeguard offering a moral check against usurpation. Thomas Jefferson proposed in Virginia's Constitution, no free man shall ever be debarred the use of arms. Patrick Henry thundered, the great object is that every man be armed. George Washington urged that a free people ought not only to be armed, but disciplined. These were not fringe views, they were consensus among the founders. The militia understood as the body of the people, not a small select group. An armed populace deterred tyranny, enabled self-defense, and made large standing armies less necessary. Strict gun laws, broad bans on categories of firearms, onerous permitting, registration leading to confiscation, or assault weapon prohibitions that target common sporting arms clash with this vision. They treat the right as a government-granted privilege rather than a pre-existing individual right. The founders rejected this. Rights were not bestowed by the king or parliament. They were retained by sovereign individuals who created government. infringing the means of self-defense and resistance undermines the very foundation of popular sovereignty. History bears this out. Disarmed populations have often fallen to tyranny. In colonial America, British attempts at control through disarmament fueled rebellion. In the 20th century, authoritarian regimes, from Nazi Germany to others, frequently imposed gun registration and restrictions before consolidating power. While correlation is not always causation, the pattern is clear. Governments that fear their people seek to disarm them. Our founders explicitly designed the Second Amendment as a counter to that impulse. Critics argue that modern weapons in society demand stricter controls for government safety. Crime and tragic violence are real concerns that deserve serious address through prosecution, mental health, and culture. Yet data on defensive guns, defensive gun uses, hundreds of thousands annually by multiple studies, remind us that firearms in responsible hands save lives too. More fundamentally, safety cannot justify abandoning first principles. The Constitution is not a suicide pact, but neither is it a fair-weather document to be suspended when dangers arise. The right exists precisely for dangerous times. Allowing strict gun laws risks normalizing the idea that government can disarm law-abiding citizens while criminals ignore laws. It shifts reliance from self-reliance to state protection. A dangerous, dangerous bargain. The founders knew police and armies cannot be everywhere. Ultimate responsibility rests with the individual. An armed citizenry remains the best defense against both foreign and domestic overreach. It embodies civic virtue, the willingness to defend one's community and rights. Forgetting our history makes us vulnerable to ahistorical arguments that the Second Amendment is outdated or only about hunting or state militias. The text ratification debates and contemporaneous writings refute this. The people means individuals. Shall not be infringed is clear language. Well-regulated meant properly equipped and trained, not heavily regulated by bureaucracy. We owe it to the generations who sacrificed at Valley Forge, Normandy, and countless other fields to remember, liberty is not self-perpetuating. Each generation must recommit, remembering arms us against complacency. Upholding the right to keep and bear arms honors the principle that free men and women are sovereign, not subjects. Let us reject the false choice between safety and freedom. True security flows from a virtuous, armed, and vigilant citizenry. As we confront challenges in the 21st century, let history light the way. Remember the Revolution. Remember the Bill of Rights. Remember that the Tree of Liberty, as Jefferson noted, occasionally needs refreshing. But above all, remember that Americans are a free people, precisely because we have resolved to stay that way. The choice is ours. Will we remember, or will we forget and pay the price? Well,
very good. I have two points.
Yeah.
The first one is people say, well, you know, the Second Amendment is written rather clumsily. And in today's linguistic pattern, perhaps. But if you know how to diagram sentences, diagram it out for the meat that is there.
Yeah.
Now, about a week, two weeks ago, I sent an email to Chuck. You know, I said, it's time to get rid of the NFA of 34, the 68 Gun Control Act, and the Firearms Owners Protection Act of 1986, and all the little sublets. And we had a good discussion. I hope, actually, we'll bring it back to Shooter's Corner, because in all of those acts or whatever, there is some necessity.
Yeah,
but there is way too much onerous process there.
Yeah,
that we the people need to decide, and then you know bring to the table.
Yep. Yeah. No, and I completely agree, and I think that things get lost in translation over time, especially when people are able to debate what was written for us, and someone is able to counter it well enough to convince the populace that what I am saying is correct and not what was actually written. Just because you have a bad representative doesn't mean that what they're saying is incorrect when they are telling the truth. And I think, you know, when you look at how everything was written back then, like you're saying, like it's just the meat. I don't need the potatoes. I don't need the bones. I don't need everything else. It was written as simple as day. And they ended it with "shall not be infringed." But today we discuss it like, well, what does it mean? What is a militia? Do we even have militias anymore? Okay, well, no, this was for hunting, which is stupid because it never was.
no, it never
and
was.
We've talked about it on the show before, too, with the argument of like, well, they were only talking about muskets. And no, there was leaps and advances happening all the time, constantly. I mean, we just talked about it now that there was a lever action that was being invented 70 years prior to our country founding. So to say that it's limited to modern firearms, you know, you can preach that all you want, but you're wrong. And we keep taking these things for granted, and we keep letting, you know, the government overreach. And I've heard the saying, you know, you don't want to bite the hand that's feeding you, and you don't want to, you know, yell at the government for allowing you to have these things. Well, the hand shouldn't be there because this is our God-given right. Mm-hmm. It is. And there are, I do agree to an extent, which is people can view it as a little bit of hypocrisy, but, you know, there are certain things that are justifiable, you know, a background check, you know, things like that. But to the extent that it's just ensuring that the correct person is handling it, and it's hard to, you know, justify what we're saying now with that because everyone should own something, but we should have this. But at the same time, someone, if they want to get a weapon, they're going to get it.
Yes.
And, you know, choking your law-abiding citizens into being fearful of them owning something and they are unsure as to what's going on. The ATF right now is looking to recut the pistol brace ruling. You have so many Americans that are scared. Is what I have legal? Is it going to be legal? Am I going to have to do this? Are they going to do the submit a tax stamp and, you know, all this stuff? And that's not correct. They shouldn't be causing mass fear and hysteria because they don't want to admit that they're wrong about their rulings.
Yeah. Ignorance is a dangerous animal.
Yes, absolutely. And they say ignorance is bliss, and there is a reason why. But we got to get into our last and final break. Stay tuned with us here at Shooter's Corner. When we get into our last segment, we're going to be talking about guns of the West versus guns of today. Stay tuned here at Shooter's Corner, KFAR Radio.
Going camping is the simply satisfying, relaxing way to enjoy the Alaskan outdoors. Plan to get the most out of your experience with a visit to Frontier Outfitters. Check off your list of essentials such as tents, sleeping bags, and cookware from your favorite brands such as Mountain Hardware, Kelty, Slumberjack, Coleman, Jetboil, and more. Garmin GPS. Protect your eyes with sunglasses by Oakley, Maui Jim, and Costa. Your successful camping trip begins at Frontier Outfitters. Frontier Outfitters for your Alaskan lifestyle.
Otto Trim Design has it all, from radios, speakers, amplifiers, moose lights, running boards, and step bars, to WeatherTech floor liners and mud flaps. And don't forget about the CompuStar remote starts, Arctic polyurea spray and bed liners, back racks, and ladder racks. Otto Trim Design also has Lear and ARE toppers and smart caps. All this and more at Otto Trim Design under the big American flag.
Customized by Otto Trim Design.
KFAR weather.
Cloudy skies expected overnight with lows around 44. Northeasterly winds around 5 miles per hour. Cloudy skies expected again Thursday, daytime highs approaching 60. Mainly cloudy skies expected Thursday night, lows of down to about 42. And that's your weather on KFAR 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki.
And now back to Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio.
Welcome back, listeners. I'm still not Chuck. All right. So
I'm still kid.
You're still kid. I thought you were Cindy. All right. So let's get into the last part of the show today. So we're going to talk about a few things here. And I've broken this down into five categories because, I mean, firearms in and of itself, you can talk about things for months and months and months and still have much to talk about. So we've broken it down. If you missed it before the show or before the break, we're talking about guns of the West versus guns of today. So the five categories for today are pistol, rifle, shotgun, long rifle, and self-defense pistol. So representing the guns of the West today, according to statistical data, the most popular pistol was the Colt Single Action Army, or known as the Peacemaker. 1873, the iconic gun that won the West, a single-action revolver chambered primarily in .45 Colt. Simple, rugged, and instantly recognizable. It was the preferred sidearm of cowboys, lawmen, and outlaws alike. So we have our resident, I would say Alaska's resident expert on all things cowboy. So you want to talk a little bit about the Peacemaker?
Well, you know, I thank you for those accolades. I've got a little homework, I guess, I've got to do. The single action army, you know, comes about from Colt. He was not, before he passed away in 1862. He did things differently, so it took a while to get a top strap firearm.
Yeah.
While Remington had them, and so on and so forth, bore through cylinders. But when it did arrive, it certainly had its place. Now, I'm not too sure that if I lived in that time and day, that it would have been my favorite. As in cowboy action shooting, I shoot something that's nearly like it. It's still an open top, meaning there's no top strap. You know, it's the Colt 7172 model, but it starts, it tests all the features that will later become the single action Army of 73, which by 1875, it's almost everywhere. But again, you have two camps. You've got the Smith & Wesson top break models, and all, and again, perhaps we'll come back to an article that I'm just getting ready to produce about Wyatt Earp and the 30 seconds and the 30 shots that made up the OK Corral. But yet, again, the Earps tend to have the Smith & Wessons. The Cowboys had the 73s, actually the Frontier model, which was 44-40.
Oh, really?
But yes. But again, you can't argue, it's like 1911, you can't argue that there, you know, the 73 was just made Hollywood famous.
Yeah.
No, it was already Hollywood famous before there was a Hollywood.
Yeah, well before.
Yeah.
But all right, so that was the firearm representing the West for the olden times for pistols. So guns of today, there's no surprise here that what's coming out on top for today is going to be the Glock 19, specifically the Gen 5. It is the most popular compact 9mm pistol in America. And we're talking about America because that's what matters. Reliability, high capacity, 15 plus one rounds, lightweight polymer construction, and striker fired for fast, consistent trigger pulls. I don't really know that we need to expand more on that outside of the fact that, like, for an all-around great pistol, Glock is always a good choice. And the 19, for I'd say 90% of Americans, it fits every need that they have. You can mount, if you get a certain model or get the optics cut done to your slide, you can mount an optic on there, which makes shooting way easier. You can add a light to it. You can fine tune it with Glock stuff. Don't start throwing random aftermarket parts and then create this Franken build. But you can do so much to it, or you can leave it bone stock and it's going to perform. And it notably is the best pistol in the 21st century, especially with the implementation of the Gen 1 with Glock 17 and that foothold hitting. How you were talking about how there was the 73 was Hollywood famous before Hollywood, and what made the Glock famous was Hollywood. Its reliability was already there. It was always a great pistol to start, but it wasn't that known, and then it started becoming the pistol of the villains. Or the evil people in movies and TV shows, and then police started picking it up, armies started picking up across the world, and it soon became what is known as the most boring revolution in firearms history.
So I, you know, as a cowboy, and not attuned to the modern world, where do I order a Glock knuckle?
A Glock knuckle. you can find them in a Sears catalog right next to some horse suppressor socks.
Okay, unicorns and things.
Yeah, like all the other
chicken lips.
Exactly. But all right, so getting into the next category, we got rifles. So representing the guns of the West, we have the Winchester Model 1873, the gun that won the West. Lever action repeating rifle, often in 44-40. It held 15 plus rounds, allowed rapid follow-up shots compared to single shot rifles of the era, and it was extremely popular with settlers and cowboys.
Well, you know, and the interesting thing is that Some people just get upset. It didn't win the West. The win was all we already won. And again, I don't claim that it did or it didn't. But its first iteration is the Henry rifle, which could hold 16 rounds. It was a rimfire cartridge fed to it, and when fired properly, you could run all of those 16 rounds out of that gun in 11 seconds. And pretty much stay on target. So as we grow a four-ender, put a wooden stock on the front of it, it does. It becomes quite the firearm. 44-40, 45 Colt. It does begin, but the bottlenecked cartridges for black powder, 38-40, and so on and so forth, make that rifle. You know, again, what we know, and again, it is famed by Hollywood before Hollywood was Hollywood at all. And if the cartridge length is right in the 24 1/4-inch barrel, you're only going to get 14 in. You'll get 13 in the magazine and one in the chamber. But it is still a very phenomenal rifle. It's one of the firearms that I own. I have a reproduction, but I have an original made in 1892. So, again, I'm not trying to talk it down. It has its own history that I cannot take away from it.
That's awesome. I'm glad you have a piece of history with you. That's awesome. I would love to own something that was historical, not just some garbage M9 from the Army. It is history's worst pistol in my eyes. But no,
M9, no.
no, awful. But representing the firearms of today for the rifle section is going to be, to no surprise again, the AR-15, specifically chambered in 223 or 5.56. It is the most common rifle platform in America. Why? Because that's important, because we are Americans. Semi-automatic, modular, lightweight, and usually pretty cheap. Offers high capacity, low recoil, and exceptional accuracy. And I do not think we need to go any further in that, because we talk about AR-15s all the time here. So I think we can move right on to the shotguns.
Yeah. Well, real quick, you know, when I was first introduced to it, which was 1972, you know, being older, like I said, I like that wooden gun and everything. But yeah. I have learned and grown to love the M16 platforms.
I'll have to send you some links. There's a company that makes specifically for the M16A1. I think they do have a model of it for the A2, or at least parts for it. But it replaces all the plastic furniture with wood furniture. Looks something like someone from the future took an M16 back and, you know, into the 1700s, and their plastic broke and they needed to fix something. And it's the ugliest yet most beautiful thing I've ever laid my... It's expensive now to get the pieces for it, but it is such a funny-looking weapon. But it looks like this will actually be our last category we can talk about, because we are a little short on time. But we're going to talk about shotguns. So representing the West is the Coach Gun, a side-by-side double-barrel, typically 12-gauge, short-barreled shotgun that were staples in stagecoaches, wagons, and homes. Brands like those from Remington or English Makers were common. Fast for close range defense.
Exactly. Although sometimes you will see paintings, or not so much photos, because who's taking pictures when a stagecoach is running for its life? But there'll be longer barrels.
Yeah.
And they are phenomenal. They were the gun of the West for home defense on the prairies as such. So whether it was a stagecoach or, you know, what we call a Prairie Mary in her soddy, which, you know, we talked about it shows a year ago or so, they do well. Although I love the lever action 1887, but that's a topic for another time. But they were, you know, 12 gauge, 10 gauge, they got the work done.
Yep. And I think what's funny about it too, even with the short barreled version, is, you know, you look at home defense at the time, and it's not like homes nowadays. You walked in and there was a small room, no smaller or no bigger than this booth, and then right into someone's bedroom. So someone breaks in, I can just roll over and I'm going to send them flying.
Yeah, short barrel shotgun gets it done.
Absolutely. All right, and then representing the guns of today, the Remington 870, and this is a tie between the 870 and the Mossberg 500. They are the gold standard for modern defensive and utility shotguns. Reliable, versatile, and widely used for home defense, hunting, and law enforcement. And, I mean, that really is a shotgun that goes anywhere. I used a 500 in the Army for breaching purposes, and, you know, you're not supposed to use it against soft targets, but still happens. But it is a phenomenal shotgun. You can see them. You can buy, you know, used ones for next to nothing. They cost, mm-hmm. I mean, even brand new ones are like no more than, I think, $400 for, you know, bare bones model. And that's going to last you, you know, you can pass it down to your kids. I mean, you'd really have to mess that thing up and shoot a lot to even get that barrel getting to the point where you need to rebarrel it. And even then, that's probably $45.
Yeah.
So it's not terrible. It's a great shotgun. And, you know, I love the fact that I've used it and have them. So yeah, but, okay. So we got a little bit of time here left. So, just reminders, we do have ASP coming up to Fairbanks for our next class, June 20th through 21st. Go to our Facebook page, C4 Training Group LLC, click the link, or go to the site, activeselfprotection.com, find the sign-up link. We'll have Chris Bean and Neil Widener, who are both excellent trainers for the ASP team. Thank you, Colonel, for coming onto the show today. It was great having you on, and I love the wealth of knowledge you provide, not only to me, but to our listeners. And the last thing, folks, continue to train, continue to improve, stay free, stay vigilant, and stay American. God bless you. Have a great day.
Amen.
You've been listening to Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio, brought to you by Price RV, Auto